हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 73. The impersonalists imagine the various demigods to be forms of the Lord. For example, the Mayavadis worship five demigods, Panchopasana. They do not actually believe in the form of the Lord, but for the sake of worship, they imagine some form to be God. Generally, they imagine a form of Vishnu, a form of Shiva, and forms of Ganesh, the sun god, and Durga. This is called Panchopasana. Daksha, however, wanted to worship not an imaginary form, but the supreme form of Lord Krishna. Right, so they're taking his imaginary because they're taking that it has some connection with the Lord and that it represents, you know, some aspect of the Supreme. But they don't actually believe in that the Supreme has a form. So in other words, if you were going to project that the Supreme had a form, then it would be these forms. So it's not that there's actually an interest in worshiping. That's why you have to see why is somebody worshiping. Right? Just that somebody is worshiping is not enough. There has to be the reason why are they worshiping. Right? Because here is that the worship is secondary to the primary, which is liberation. Or for the karmi, then getting their fruit of facility. Does that make sense? So it looks the same. The form is the same. One may say, no, but they're doing worship. But it's just like, yes, but the chef is doing cooking. So is it prasad? The devotee's cooking and offering to deity is prasad. And the chef is cooking. Is it prasad? You understand? What's the difference? The consciousness. So the consciousness between the impersonalist karmis, their worship of the Lord, even if they're worshiping Vishnu, and then the devotee's worship of the Lord, then it's different because of the consciousness. But the ritual is the same because there's only one form of ritual. Right? Does that make sense? There's just one way of doing it. But it doesn't change. The mechanics don't change. That's the thing is nowadays we put so much emphasis on the mechanics. The mechanics just efficiently get something to work. Right? But it's not the thing that makes it actually happen. Because you mechanically do things, you get a result, but the result is not actually what we're looking for. We're looking for an experience from that result. Like, if there's no experience from the result, what's the point of the result? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. So then that experience that you gain is based on your consciousness. So depending upon your consciousness, that kind of experience you can gain. So if you're Krishna conscious, you'll gain a Krishna conscious experience. If you're not, if you're a karma, you're a jnani, you'll get that experience. Like that. So, yes.
For example, if they're going for Harinam outside on the public, and devotees singing kirtan, if his mood pure, my question is, depends mood depends.
See, the name is independent.
Yes.
And so the name is the name. Mm. So when people hear the holy name, they'll get benefit. Mm. Now, if you have more purity, then they'll get more benefit. Like that, we take part, and then we get that credit. But the point is the name being the name, he's independent, so he acts anyway. So it's not that if you're thinking about your dying grandmother, then you go out on Hari Nam, then everyone becomes depressed and no one actually gets any spiritual benefit. No, it's just that you won't take part as much, you won't be as attractive, you won't have that as much influence. But the holy name is the holy name, so he still has his influence. Yeah, so you don't have to worry. You just keep going out and partying off, okay? Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Then, no, they worship without faith. So
they worship without faith. Yes. Means they have faith, but only faith in what they want to get done. They don't have devotional faith. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we'll say that's without faith. But they have faith that worship of these demigods will give them a result they're looking for.
And they do get the results.
They do get their results because they have faith in that much of it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have faith in other things.
What about the 11th offense of the holy name, that one can chant the holy name for so many millions of lifetimes and still not get the result?
Yeah.
So, but you said even if it's the holy
means
name,
they're getting a benefit. Are they making this offense? We may be making the offense, but they're not. See, we have to look at it that we're not actually the supreme controller of everything. It's not that everything depends upon us. We're an instrument. You know, it's just like, let's say, when you're cooking, the spoon's in a grumpy mood that day. Does that mean the cooking's not going to turn out all right? It just means the spoon won't get a good experience out of it, but it's still the cook still cooks. Because we have to remember that Krishna is in control of all these things. And so we're trying to do our best to take part in the process. So it's not that, oh, I don't have to do anything or it's all dependent upon me. No, it's I try to do my best to serve, assist Krishna to please him. That's what we're trying to do.
So it would not have the effect on us. It would just have the effect on them.
Effect means? Means the offense will have the effect on us. The offense won't have an effect on them.
Okay.
And we may not be as absorbed in Krishna, but they may be influenced. Because the name is independent. Yes.
Rupa Goswami says, Jnana Karmajana Vrita. So in terms of experience, because we're not freed from karma and gyan, we have a mixed experience. It might be kittens going on, but it's too many people, or kids are running around, and we're getting irritated, but it's not from the kitten. It's from the internal. However, our experience is spoiled. So how is that possible that spiritual activities dependent so much on the secondary things?
Means they don't. We are. So in that case that you're giving there, then it's explained that in Ruchi there's two kinds of tastes. One that is just that it's the holy name, that's the taste. The other is that the ideal situation in which the holy name is chanted. Like the example is given, let's say someone with a very good voice, very good tonal quality, very good presentation of the kirtan is doing kirtan. And so we very much appreciate it. You know, so we're getting the taste for that, but it also has that aspect that it has to be good kirtan in the way of, you know, the musicality of it. But then let's say that someone else starts singing who's not so musically good. And so then we may find our experience is lessened because we expect that, you know, the quality of it to be very good.
Yeah.
Rather than the consciousness. So it's not that the holy name is affected by these. We are affected because we only want it in a certain way. You know, it's just like a small child. You're trying to feed them food, right? Is there anything wrong with the food? No, but they have so much difficulty. You know, it's too big, it's too this, it's too that. You know, it's just like that. So that's the way it is. But the food can be eaten. So someone else can eat it. You know, the kid doesn't want to eat it. Doesn't mean everybody else can't eat it. So all it is that we do our best. If we're affected by the situation, then we do our best to not be affected. So where we'll sit, where we'll do things like that, you know, maybe keep your eyes closed during the kirtan, then you don't see the kids running around and stuff like that. It helps a lot, you know. like that. You can also, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned, when you chant your japa, if you're affected by the external environment, cover yourself with a blanket. Then you can't see anything, so then you can just sit there and chant. So you can try that. Go there, cover yourself with your chatter, and just sit there and chant. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you do your best, because with time, as you get purified, that won't affect. Does that make sense? That's why you have devotees who, they organize it, they manage it. So they're trying to manage that it's the best experience for everybody. That's their service. So they may not be taking part as much in the kirtan itself and getting the benefit from that. They're taking part in seeing that it all goes on nicely so that everybody else gets a good experience. So you see that in this way, management is supportive of, not that he's the manager, so he's the most advanced person there just because he's a manager. You know? That makes sense? If that was the case, then, you know, guys like, you know, Stalin would be like, you know, Mahabhava or something. You know? No? Yeah. Yes.
Krishna is in everything.
Yes.
And Krishna is everything. But sometimes you say that's like lack of Krishna. So
that means our consciousness. The only, Prabhupada says, the only thing lacking in the material world is consciousness. Otherwise, as far as facilities and everything else, it's all there.
Yeah, but can we say that in auspicious situations or activities or things, items, Krishna is more there?
It's not that he's more there, it's just that he's manifesting those qualities more.
Okay, so he's manifesting the superior qualities, so we can,
yes,
we can say he's,
but it's
more.
But no, but it's just, but he's still not the qualities, he's still beyond. It's still him, but he is a person as beyond. So we're trying to remember him the person and please him the person.
Yeah.
So it is a better, it is a more full manifestation, but it still doesn't mean that it's that makes it superiority. It's that it's closer to pleasing Krishna. That's why it's better.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really? Good. In this regard, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and an ordinary living being. As pointed out in the previous verse, Sarvam Puman Veda Gunams Chat Taj Gyo Na Veda Sarva Gyam Anantam Ide. The omnipotent Supreme Lord knows everything, but the living being does not actually know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I know everything, but no one knows me. Right? So, because no one can know him. It's only what he reveals they can know. Because he's unlimited, so how will they know? Right? They're dependent. This is the difference between the Supreme Lord and an ordinary living being. In a prayer in Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti says, my dear Lord, you exist inside and outside, yet no one can see you. Because right? unless he reveals himself, you can't know the Lord. That's the whole point. It's not by my knowledge, by my effort, by, you know, my cleverness, or whatever it is that I consider to be good qualities that I identify myself by. That still won't get you Krishna. Krishna is beyond all that. That's the whole point.
Maharaj,
yeah.
When you say about it, Krishna reveals himself, and some devotees also are chanting, they imagine, you know, Madhava or Shamsundara or whichever deities they like, you know. So is that
they, okay? If they're chanting and they're remembering the deities, that's fine.
That's not imagination, right? Because
since when is Krishna imagination? They see themselves out there frolicking in the fields of Braja with Krishna, and that's imagination. But Krishna's not imagination. That's why you remember the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna as he's doing that with his eternal associates in that. We don't project ourselves there. Yeah? The conditioned soul cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by speculative knowledge or by imagination. One must therefore know the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So only by Krishna can you know Krishna. Right? So, does that make sense? Yeah. He reveals himself, but he cannot be understood by speculation, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.29. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So that's the thing, is that the knowledge is simply a medium to in exchange between the Lord. It itself is not actually the thing. Because we have to remember is that we may be proud of our knowledge, our intellectual ability, but we have to remember that intelligence is actually dead matter. The mind is dead matter. So it's only because the consciousness of the living entity is being projected through that, and that the Lord is seeing all these things or hearing all these things, that he's there, and then through our projection, then we can see something. So it's not actually the intelligence and mind that makes it. So someone has more or less, you can see a little more detail, a little less, but that's just because of the quality of the material nature you're looking through. You can't become proud of that. You know, it's like, say, you know, does that make sense? You know, it's like being proud that my flashlight's bigger than your flashlight. Does that make sense? So that doesn't make sense?
I was thinking, that's something to be proud of.
So, means you can, but are you the flashlight? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Kids may do, but you understand? So, therefore, it's just a facility. And it's not because you have a bigger flashlight, you see more. Right? It's because of Krishna's mercy, then you see more. Because even you see, the senses pull in the information, whether you know what to do with that information and digest it. Because the whatever information you pull in, the intelligence, I mean, is the mind, the first thing it's going to do is try to simplify it down to, you know, one thing, then it's going to categorize it. Right? So now when you categorize it, what are you categorizing it according to? Your previous impressions. So if you have no previous impression, you can't categorize it. Right? So where do modern archaeologists categorize something where they find evidence of modern man millions of years ago when they say he's not supposed to be there? Where do they categorize this information? Right? They'll throw it out. They'll say, oh, there's something wrong here. You know, there must have been a fissure in the earth, and then this person fell in, so therefore he fell down to the depth that we expect him to find. So therefore he was 20 feet below the ground because he fell into a crack in the earth. But actually, he's not supposed to be there. That's what they'll do with it. In other words, they can't categorize it properly because of their own impressions. Because what you're doing is you're taking the information, according to previous impressions, you're going to make this into an impression. Because the mind just deals with impressions. Right? Then you're going to take those impressions, and now that you've categorized it, you've made it down to one thing, now you're going to expand on it. What you can do with this categorization. How will it apply? And having applied all these different ways, then you're going to choose that according to your identity, your false ego. Right? Or for a devotee, his real ego. But he's going to, according to your ego, your identity, then you're going to, of the options, you're going to choose what you can do. Does that make sense? Right? So then the guy looks at this and that, he looks at it and he sees so many options from this, then we could do so many things. We could go, you know, we could maybe go into business, or with this we could maybe win a Nobel Prize. So as a scientist, he goes for the Nobel Prize. Right? His assistant, then he sneaks it out and gives it to the corporate world because he'd rather have the money. Right? Because he's not going to get the prize because only one person can get the prize, right? And it's not going to be him. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, like this, according to identity, then you apply it then out through your senses. So you can see in this whole process, no matter how much we say it's objective, it's totally, absolutely, totally subjective. So even the most objective academic is totally subjective because they can only see things according to their own impressions. They can't see outside of their little box. Of course, they'll say, my box is better than your box, but as we said, that's what kids do. Right? We have to remember the social, you know, ability of these people is like a child. So we can't expect, they're really smart, they're like really smart kids. You know? So we have to be very conscious of the fact that you cannot know Krishna by intelligence, because you're only going to categorize him according to your own impressions. You can't know him. It's just the fact. That's just how it works. So only if Krishna reveals, then you can do it. If he doesn't reveal, you cannot know. It's that simple. No matter how smart you are, how big an IQ you have, right? It doesn't matter. So that's just the way it works. Within the mundane impressions that everybody else is working in, you may be better at it than others because you can see more and calculate more and come up with more options. Yes, but it's still within the subjective or the speculative field. That's why Prabhupada says knowledge, imagination, speculation. It doesn't matter. You're a better speculator than anybody else, the world's best speculator. But it doesn't mean that you can understand God. Because he's beyond this. He's not within our experience. Is that,
yes. We see here practical example with Vedanta Sutra that Shabda is the same for everybody.
Yes.
But then, you know, different groups, they come to completely opposite conclusions.
Yes.
And the same with the devotees, we can say, because we filter everything through our experience and...
Yes.
Impressions.
Right, right.
And then on top of this, then Shiva says that I know Krishna. Shukadev Goswami knows. Vyasadev
may or may not know.
We're not really sure. So we're sitting here and it's wonderful. But what is our chance actually as devotees? Because we live in our own bubble basically.
Yes, but the point is, as long as it's a Krishna conscious bubble, then...
But it's imaginary. It's not
imaginary. His point is that Krishna is real. Him being everything is real. Us being aware of that, then means then we start to see in that kind of perspective. Even if we're only seeing a little bit, it's still real little bit. You know, it's just like you have, you know, it's pitch black out, you know, no moon, no stars, nothing. Right? But if you have a candle, you're in light. It's not a lot of light. You know? It's not like you have one of those, big, whatever it is, you know, 20,000 watt lights that they, you know, in Hollywood, they do, the, you know, through the sky to show where the programs are and stuff, those kind of things. You know, so the point is that it's light. It's real. It's substance. It may be a small amount of substance, but it's actual substance. And if we keep it the process, then it will grow. Because we have to remember is that the conditioning isn't us. We're identifying with it. So that's where the difficulty comes, and that's where the stages are. But in actuality, the soul is transcendental. So therefore, that's the natural position. We just have to be convinced that that's our natural position. Then we can function at that. We're thinking, no, I'm conditioning, I am this conditioning, so therefore I can't do. Yes, conditioning can't be Krishna conscious, because it's all dead matter. It's the soul that's conditioned who can become Krishna conscious. It's not that you're going to be, you know, conditioned, your body is going to be, you know, totally spiritual or something. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be that according to the material energy is going to remain as the material energy. But it's just a matter of whether you use that to block our advancement in Krishna consciousness or use it to advance in Krishna consciousness. And the point is it's incremental. And it doesn't matter how small the increments are, it's working. You're moving forward. So just by exposing yourself to the process, even if you don't know how to take care very nicely, you just go to the kirtan, you go to the classes, you chant your japa, you read, you associate with devotees, you take prasad, the effect will be there. So that's the whole point, is that firm faith. So that's one of the qualities of the Uttamadhikari or Bhava Bhakta, is that he had that firm faith that by continuing this process, they will get Krishna's mercy. Not that they have that real, they don't have prema, but they have that complete faith that they can get that. So that's the difference. So the Kamala Shraddha means that we kind of have come to naught. the Madhyama Shraddha, then we tend to be more established, right? And then that Uttama Shraddha, then we have that firm faith that yes, we can. So that's the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. We may be a rat bag, we know the process works. Like that. Is that something? Okay. Is that okay? So it's a matter of faith is what powers the whole thing. It's not technique. It's faith. That's why we say, because if it's not intelligence, why would it be technique that intelligence uses? So it's faith that actually makes it work. So if the faith is more, then you're more advanced. The faith is so. You might see, let's say, a younger devotee, he has more faith, less technique, but they're really fixed. But then as he gets more mature and all that, and he starts getting involved in, whatever it is that he gets involved in, family or business and all these different things, then his faith gets distracted. So he may not be so well situated. Even though his technique is his chanting and doing all the Vaishnava elements are much easier. You can put on a dhoti, it won't fall off. His tilak doesn't look like, a three-year-old put it on for him. Or like, say, even better, a chimpanzee, Does that make sense? So then by externally it looks like they're better. But the faith might be distracted. But because they've done all that, now if the faith becomes strong again, now they're so much more ahead. So that's why there's a difference between if those who are more advanced in devotional service get distracted, their position's still different from someone who's younger, who's not as developed, even though they may be nicely situated. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Can you say that the process of bhakti, we do bhakti so that we can revive the dormant Vishnu?
Yes.
So, in this process of revival, why is the effect unseen?
Why is the effect of revival unseen? Why do you say it's unseen?
We cannot see anything.
I cannot see anything.
Tangible.
Tangible. What do you want as tangible?
In the sense that we have faith in the devotees, the acharyas, and in that faith we are continuing with Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
But the effect that has to be seen, the dham in terms of Krishna, and that is simply in the books. It's simply in the books. For me, it's simply
okay.
You do the process, but the output is not there.
The output, but how are you defining output? How do you define output? See, the difficulty is if you're doing it in terms of charts, then you may not see a whole lot. Right? See, is that we may have a particular concept of what it should look like. But the point is that we have faith in the scriptures that already is an output. Otherwise, who else has faith in scriptures? Right?
Does the college professor have faith in the scripture? No, he's a comparative religions teacher. He studies them all the time. He has zero faith. So then we have faith, that's output. We're following the process, that's output. We're associated with devotees, we're in the Dham, that's output.
Otherwise, do you have all the facilities here in Mayapur that you have, in other parts of India? You go to Bombay, Pune, Delhi, Chennai.
Yes, we have.
Have everything?
Yeah, I have everything.
Okay, then that's good. So that's not an output? You're out in the middle of nowhere and you have all the facilities, so that's not a symptom that something's working? It says Krishna takes care. Whatever you're supposed to have, then you have. So you're here and you have it.
That
so then that's not
material, not material facility. Something spiritual, devotional.
And so you can only interpret anything that you can. So then here's the problem: is anything you can see, you calculate it as material. So then you can't. How would you define or quantify the spiritual sense? Anything that's quantifiable, you say is material. If I can see it, it's material. Not that I have all this facility. It's like this. Day 76. This is lunch. You know fat rice? House rice? I mean, it's not the modern, nicely packaged, you know, Japanese brown rice. I'm talking about the local fat rice. Right? The sitichup. Huh? Yeah. The red stuff that kind of smells like fish. That one? You know that one? You don't know that one. Okay. Well, that's the one. You have a big pile of that. You have some dal that basically the only difference between that and water is that the dal's yellow. Okay? And you pour some of that on that fat rice. And you have a little bit of sabji. But what is this sabji? This sabji is drumsticks. That's it. There's nothing else in there except chili. That's the facility. Okay? So, now, by Krishna's arrangement, then he's made all these nice arrangements that you have a bit more than that. Right? But, now we're saying is if I can see it, it's material. So where's the spirit? So then what is, it doesn't matter. Even if Krishna manifested, you would just take it. Krishna appears for you. Well, that's a form. That's material. So that's not Krishna. Okay, where's Krishna? You know. Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, regarding Lord Shiva's statement of Vyasa that he may or may not know.
Yes.
I'm wondering, is he referring to different appearances of Vyasadeva? Because we know Vyasadeva's a post.
Vyasadeva's a post, you could have that aspect, but let us say when he, because he wrote all the Vedic literature. Right? And all that Vedic literature was up to the point of Mahabharata. What was Narad Muni's, you know, final opinion on all his writings so far? So that's may or may not know. So it's only after that discussion with Narad Muni, then when he meditated upon those instructions, then he saw the Lord in his trance, then he understood a Chintabheda Veda Tattva, then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam. But now this discussion between Lord Shiva and who is that with? Do we know? Well, whatever. So Lord Shiva's making that statement. But that may not have happened just 5,000 years ago. That may have happened millions of years or trillions of years ago. And so the point is he may or may not know, depending upon where he is. After getting instructed by Narad Muni in this way, then he knows. But before that, he may not know. Is that like that? Yeah. I mean, our Vyasadeva knows, but still the pastime is he doesn't know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Is it normal that that kind of romantic sentiment for Krishna consciousness goes down with age?
It goes down with age. Like, romantic sentiment goes down with age.
Like when you're younger, you have general more like romantic.
I would use the term more probably. Well, I guess romantic would work, but I'd probably say more idealistic. Because we've simplified it in the idealism, but it's based on what we expect to see. Again, it's this seeing thing. So, it's that we expect to see Krishna consciousness in a certain way. Like I remember once somebody came to the Gurukul back in the 80s, and they were really disappointed. Because they expected to come in and see all these Bengali boys, you know, walking around with these brilliant, effulgent, looking like something out of the Bhagavatam and all that, and always singing, you know, snippets of the, you know, songs of the Acharyas and perfect tunes and with wonderful pronunciation, you know, not a Jessore Bangladesh accent and stuff like that, you know, so. Like that, or even worse, Borishal, right? You know, so yeah, so they were very disappointed. It's like you know, this is not Gurukul. This is that. So they had their own idea. No, it's like it means we're trying to get them to that. But you're starting with this kid that doesn't, you know, the concept of blowing his nose, you know, doesn't even exist. You know, like that, and when he talks, even other Bengalis can't understand because his accent is so different. Right, you know, and so, and then we're supposed to turn that, you know, and he's just playing, you know, Sadguti all day at home. So then when he comes here and he's got to work, you know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's, we have an idyllic idea. And then as we expose ourselves more within the Krishna consciousness process, then we may be disappointed by the external forms that we perceive. But if we have that faith, we understand that this form is special. I mean, that the kid's in the Gurukul and not at home in Karmi school, that's something special. Right? You know, that kid over there does know how to blow his nose after, 2 years, then, that's advancement. You know what I'm saying? So it's developing, but so you have to know what you want to see. So when we expect to see our own projection of ideal in our own way, according to our own standards, then that's where the problem comes in. But if we just take it that this is nice, then we get less affected. But yeah, you can use it also romantic works, but I'm just, just for...
Sometimes also notice that as with time, then you have, as you said, more facilities that you connect more, like by intelligence, you connect more things to Krishna consciousness, more efficient, apparently do more service, but like kind of that sentiment, that's a person that you more efficient.
No, because we're looking at the secondary more. See, is that we're becoming more expert in the secondary aspects of Krishna consciousness, and if we make the mistake that alone is the symptom of advancement. It can be a symptom in that you want to please Krishna so you become better and better at your knowledge and skill and application and results because the results are for Krishna. Then it's a symptom of advancement. But if we think that is the advancement, then we'll get distracted. Then things will go down. Does that make sense? So I use idyllic because, let's say in Europe, continental Europe, romantic would be the proper word. Because romantic is an ideal, is a feeling and all that. Problem with the Anglo-Saxon cultures is romantic simply means a conjugal kind of... It means, if you explain, it's a secondary meaning that romantic means, idyllic. Then, it does mean that. But otherwise, the first thing that they'll think of means, yeah. Does that make sense?
But in ISKCON, we, meaning they, whoever is in charge, is to glorify managers and people with a lot of skill, like more skill.
Yes, but because then you're trying to use these skills for Krishna.
Yeah, but everybody's trying to use their skills for Krishna.
Yeah, so the point is as you develop those and you're developing those to please Krishna, then it is a symptom of development.
Yeah, but you don't see, like the mother with her... like amazing children in Gurukul getting like the VIP seat to get them. You see the managers getting the VIP seat
because the manager arranged so that they have that the program goes on.
Yeah.
The mom's arranging that their kids don't disturb the program.
Oh, well, you missed my point, but maybe I missed a bad example.
Thank you.
So every devotee is doing whatever, you're saying it's about the consciousness.
Yes, but there is a hierarchy, isn't there? Even in respect, does Manu not give a hierarchy? So
yeah,
therefore,
based on
knowledge is the highest,
uh-huh.
Then after that influence, which means managers, then after that there's money, and then after that there's knowledge and skills.
Okay.
Does that make sense? So therefore your general devotees will fit into that fourth category. The person who their money arranged the program and that's why they get up and say that, we'd like to thank, for sponsoring the program and that, all the prasad and all that, and so then, let's have, three hari bowls for, whatever it is,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's so, what I'm saying.
Yeah, but the point is because money is higher than just the general devotee. They were going to go up, yes, we'd like to thank, this devotee for, showing up today and all that, and let's have three hari bowls. Okay, next devotee, like that. And, 500 devotees later than, You understand? There's a hierarchy. And it's not a problem because we're trying to be humble anyway. So the lower we are down on the totem pole, the easier it is to be humble. Does that make sense?
No, I'm just thinking that there are devotees that you can see, like,
Yeah, and that you appreciate that. You express the devotion and all that, and so therefore then you associate with those devotees, because it's about devotional service. It's not about glorifying and all that.
Yeah, okay.
Because the glorification that we're worried about is generally a material form of it, not the spiritual. Because the spiritual, then what's that? That's by taking advantage of the association, putting in that, having that faith. That's how it's it.
Yeah.
This is the verdict of the Shastra. An ordinary man may be a great philosopher and may speculate upon what the absolute truth is, what his form is, and where he is existing. But he cannot understand these truths. Sevan muke hi jivadao. Swayam eva spurat yatha. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. 1:2-2:34. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead only through devotional service, right? So this is what his form is, where he's existing. You know, this they can go on speculating about, but they can't understand, because unless Krishna reveals it, they don't know. They can't know. This is also explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself in Bhagavad Gita 18:55. Bhaktiyamam abhijanati yavan yas chasmi tatvataha. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is only by devotional service. Unintelligent persons want to imagine or concoct a form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but devotees want to worship the actual Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Daksha prays, one may think of you as personal, impersonal, or imaginary, but I wish to pray to your lordship that you fulfill my desires to see you as you actually are. Right? So that's what we want to know, is how Krishna actually is, not how the materialist would project, how we would like this, is that how he actually is according to how he is interacting with his pure devotees. Does that make sense? So it's not how we imagine, let's say, Braja Krishna to be, but actually who Braja Krishna is according to how he's revealing himself to the residents of Vrindavan. So, yeah.
So the only way we can know this is by hearing the
through devotion. No, it's through devotional service.
Okay.
Oh. It's not that, oh, you hear the pastime, then that pastime you can be revealed. So then you have a problem because you've only heard part of the pastimes, and so you can't be, you know,
yeah.
No. Because
okay.
Krishna is complete.
Okay.
So you know anything about Krishna, then he's complete. Yes.
I just wanted to know, after you get the knowledge, that is the advancement of Krishna consciousness, how do you handle the phases before you get the knowledge and after you get the knowledge? For example, if there is a living entity who is medically unfit to live, as if they are suffering a lot, and that is why you decide to put them to sleep forever, any living entity, say, and you have cut short their life,
right,
they were suffering, and you thought that this is a good karma that you did.
Yeah.
After attaining Krishna conscious knowledge, you know that you have interfered with the karma.
Right.
And that is why, you know, the guilt.
But the point is that these are all done under the modes of nature. Therefore, then what can you do about it other than reform yourself by chanting? Because that's the only solution. You can't do anything else.
But the guilt associated with it.
But the point is that guilt is associated with the modes of nature.
Right.
So, therefore, we're not the modes of nature, so we move on. We don't do that anymore.
So you do not keep thinking about that incident and just keep...
Well, what's the advantage of thinking about that incident? There's no advantage. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that this verse is especially meant for the impersonalist, who thinks that he himself is the supreme. Because there's no difference between the living entity and God. So he's thinking like that. So this comments are for him. He thinks he and God are the same. The Mayavadi philosopher thinks that there's only one supreme truth and that he is also the supreme truth. Actually, this is not knowledge, but foolishness. And this verse is especially meant for such fools. Right? So we're pointing out that, you know, these impersonalists, so they may be intelligent or things like that, But if you put it into the context of the Vedic version, it's actually foolish. That's why Prabhupada will refer to these so-called speculators and that as foolish, because they don't understand the Vedic version. They may have so much material ability, but they're foolish. Let's say a person, the father, he has lots of money, and he manages his money well, and his money is increasing. Right? So will we say he's foolish or intelligent? He's intelligent. Now his son, he also has a fortune, but he doesn't manage it so well. He just enjoys himself and has fun with it. And the money is getting less. Would we call him foolish or intelligent? Foolish. Right? So it's not what you have, it's what you do with it. So that when we say that the scholars and intellectuals and scientists and all this are foolish, we're not saying that they don't have brains. You know, they have of anything that anybody has as far as material brains go, they've got, you know, the best that there is. But how they're using it, that's foolish. That's the difficulty. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have to be able to understand that. Actually, this is not knowledge but foolishness, and this verse is especially meant for such fools, whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion. Mayaya Pritagyana. Bhagavad Gita 7:15. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that such persons, Jnani Mani Naha, think themselves very advanced, but actually they are unintelligent. In regard to this verse, Srila Madhvacharya says, Sva deha stamhat harim prahur adhama jivam eva tu madhyamas chap yanir nitam jivad bhinnam janardanam. There are three classes of men. The lowest, adhama. Those in the middle, madhyama. And the best, uttama. The lowest, adhama, think that there is no difference between God and the living entity, except that the living entity is under designations, whereas the absolute truth has no designations. In their opinion, as soon as the designations in the material body are dissolved, the jiva, the living entity, will mix with the supreme. They give the argument of gatakasha, patakasha, in which the body is compared to a pot, with the sky within and the sky without. When the pot breaks, the sky inside becomes one with the sky outside. And so the impersonal say that the living being becomes one with the supreme. This is their argument. But Srila Madhvacharya says that such an argument is put forward by the lowest class of men. Another class of men ascertain what the actual form of the supreme is, but they agree that there is a supreme who controls the activities of the ordinary living beings. Such philosophers are accepted as mediocre. The best, however, are those who understand the Supreme Lord, Satchinananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita, 5.1, Purnanandadi Gunakam, Sarvajiva Vilakshanam. His form is completely spiritual, full of bliss, and completely distinct from that of the conditioned soul or any other living entity. Uttamastu Harim Prahus, Tarat Taratam yena teshu cha. Such philosophers are the best because they know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead reveals himself differently to worshippers in various modes of material nature. So he can see all the difference between all these different positions. Right? So those in the madhyama position, in this case, then they're going to, means none of them are going to appreciate those on the adama position because they're just atheists. But those on the Madhyama platform, then they'll argue with them over that my system's better than your system. Right? Again, the childishness. So the Uttama sees that, yes, Krishna's revealed to them according to their faith at this point. That's why they're practicing in that way. As they learn more about the Supreme Absolute Truth, then we'll see how it develops. Right? But the point is it's a path. And so they're at that point in the path. But one needs to move forward. Right?
So we should not criticize the Mayavadi system?
No, we don't criticize other religious processes because that's how they have their faith in God to a particular degree, and therefore the Lord reveals himself in that particular way according to the conditioning. Does that make sense? So then they work in that way. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like, like here, then people bow down to the Lord, to, you know, in any aspect of this that has the potency of the Lord there. Then you go a little bit more west, and then they'll only bow down to God and nothing else, you know, than that. And even he does no form, so, yeah, that. Then you go a little bit farther west, and they'll show a submission to God, but they won't bow down. So the farthest you get them down is they'll kneel. Right? And then you go a little farther west, and all they'll do is maybe nod their head a little bit or something like that. You know, so it's just a matter of he reveals according to their system. So therefore, one group doesn't need anything to bow down, another one needs a mat to bow down, and another one needs actually this fancy, you know, wooden pew with little, you know, little pads on, cushions on them so they can kneel. You know what I'm saying? So it's just he reveals himself. But the process that they're surrendering to God and all that, then that's the good part. Now, they're understanding the Lord, there'll be shortcomings. And so in those, it's not that we can't see where it's short, but the part that they know, then that's good. So you try to take that and take it further. Right? Because they're saying that, you know, my bad qualities are better than your bad qualities, and that's not very intelligent.
And devotees sometimes boast, you know, about belonging to the Gaudiya.
They boast about belonging to the Gaudiyas, but what's the position of belonging to that? But, you know, who's special?
The Acharyas are special.
If the Acharyas are special, then that's fine. Then it's just we're great fortune. We're very proud to be in that line. But it's not us who are special. If it's that we're Gaudiyas and we're better than you, so I'm better than you because I'm a Gaudiya, then that's not useful. They know that there are 33 million demigods just to convince the conditioned souls that there's a supreme power and to induce them to agree to worship one of these demigods so that by the association of devotees he may be able to understand that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. As Lord Krishna says in Gita, Matta Partanam Nanyat Kinchidasti Dananjaya, Bhagavad Gita 7:7. There's no truth superior to me. Aham Adir Hi Devanam. Bhagavad Gita 10:2. I am the origin of all the demigods. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha. Bhagavad Gita 10:8. I am superior to everyone, even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other demigods. These are the conclusions of the Shastra, and one who accepts these conclusions should be considered a first-class philosopher. Such a philosopher knows that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord of the demigods. Deva, Deveshwaram, Sutram, Anandam, Prana, Vedinaha. Okay. So, people are worshiping the demigods doing this, so they're connecting, so they're accepting that aspect of the Lord, so that's moving forward. So that's not the problem. The weakness is they don't actually fully understand the Lord. So therefore, you try to instruct them in actually the position of the Lord and actually how to approach it. But does that make sense? That they're worshiping the demigod, that's not the real problem. The problem is they think that is the supreme and that's it. And that is all that needs to be done. So that the demigods being worshipped is because they are representing an aspect of the potency of the Lord. So in that way there, just like the minister represents the government. In that way, then they're respected. But to say that they're the supreme, that's missing the point. Yes?
So these people that are worshipping Jesus, is that the same as worshipping a demigod? Like, are they worshipping...
No, because they're dealing with devotees.
So they're getting the benefit of worshipping... Like
the Supreme Lord, but they're not seeing him past the Brahman and Paramatma platform.
Okay, so
they don't see him as Bhagavan because he has no form, right? You'll say, yes, God is a loving father, he's this or that, and so many different things, and he spoke to, you know, and he did this and he did that. What's his form? He has no form. So they can't get beyond this Brahman and Paramatma. So he's the creator, maintainer, destroyer. He sets the laws. You have to follow the laws. You know, that will please God. So they can get up to that Paramatma. But when you ask them, ultimately they're impersonalists. Because they don't understand. Therefore, that they have that focus on the Supreme and not on others, then that's good. But that they have an impersonal understanding and they can't see everything in connection with the Lord, that'll be a weakness.
There is a statement by, this is their argument, but Srila Madhvacharya says that such an argument is put forward by the lowest class of men. This statement. I often come across this example, like part inside the ether and outside the ether.
Yes. So, but the point is that the ether is it's the same anyway. Whether there's a pot or not a pot, it's still sky. Well, why is it only when we break the pot then it merges in the sky? It's already sky. But the point is that volume of sky that's in the pot will still be only that volume of sky. It's not that that little pot's amount of sky now expands and now is the whole sky.
They will say like...
They will say so many things. What does it matter? You understand? Understand the point. A drop of water in the ocean is still a drop of water by volume. It doesn't mean that that drop of water now expands and becomes the ocean. They're saying that they as a jiva, now they expand and become the unlimited Brahman. How is that possible? You know, it doesn't make sense. It's just ego that they want to be God, that's all. It doesn't make sense. They use the system of logic, but their whole philosophy is not logical. A green bird and a green tree. Can't you see the green bird and the green tree? Yeah, but they think once it goes in, it merges and becomes the tree. Why doesn't the tree become the bird? You know? Or you break the pot and then the whole sky goes... down into the pot or something. You know, it doesn't happen. Does that make sense? Okay, chapter 2. So that means we finished the fourth pada of the first chapter. Yes. So we're getting somewhere. Adhyaya Prakashika. It has been conclusively proven in the first chapter that all the Veda texts treatment of Brahman as the first cause and that Brahman is the import of all the Vedic texts. This is established by the Samanvaya. Right? So everything that's there in the Vedic text is all about Brahman. It's not about anything else. Right? Then it may be aspects of Brahman in the form of manifestations of the material energy. But the material energy is also Brahman coming from the Lord. But it is a part of Brahman. Okay. In addition, the doctrine of the Pradhan being the cause of the world has also been refuted in the first chapter, as it is not based on the authority of the scriptures. Likewise, the Sutrakar established that the Supreme Brahman is the immediate, intermediate, and ultimate goal and the only objective of human life. Right? So the immediate thing of what you have to do means when your ultimate goal means you're going through stages to get to that goal. So what you're going to do now, what you're going to do later, and what will actually, when you get to the goal, all those stages are Krishna. Because whatever you're working with, the ingredients are all Krishna. It's his process, that's why it works. Otherwise, if he's not, why would it work? Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, we're going to drive to Calcutta. Now outside here there's a road. Right? And so this is where we start. This is the immediate. And then, Kalyani is going to be the intermediate. And then Calcutta is then your goal. Right, you know. So, but the point is, it's all one road. Does that make sense? Isn't that the saying, all roads lead to Calcutta? Eventually they all get to Calcutta. As declared in the scriptures, he is the cause of all causes, be it material or spiritual. Right? Whatever is there, whatever you're working at, it's him who's the cause. Just as the magician is the cause of the subsistence of the magical illusion, so also Brahman is the cause of the subsistence of this universe. By his rulership. The only difference between the magical effect and the universal effect is that the universe is a reality. The other ones, you're just creating the illusion. But here, it's a reality. We see it as an illusion. Okay. Though though fleeting in nature, unlike the magical effect, which is illusory. Just as the four classes of creatures are reabsorbed into the earth, so also projected world is finally reabsorbed into the essence during pralaya or disillusion. Right? The four classes of creatures means those who are born from the womb, eggs, sweat, and seeds or slips or cuttings. Right? Yeah. This Brahman is in truth a personality beyond the material gunas, saturated with condensed, boundless bliss. Nonetheless, this person is easily expressed in words and is different from the infinitesimal jiva. It has been further proved that the Lord is the self of all beings. He is both the efficient cause and the material cause, unlike the analogy of potter clay pot. Wherein the efficient and immaterial causes are dissimilar. This is because Brahman is non-worldly. Right? So everything's made of Brahman. And so we give the example of the potter, the clay, and the pot. So the potter is making the pot out of the clay. And then the pot is like the clay. But the point is the potter and the clay are different here. But here is Krishna is the clay. Otherwise, where does clay come from? That's the weakness in like the Mayavad philosophies to others. Where does the material energy come from? Because if it's independent on its own, if it doesn't exist, then what's the problem? Why even discuss a philosophy? Because it's not there. So you're not actually an illusion. You're not actually conditioned. You're already the Brahman. So why talk about it? Right? So there's no need to discuss. Or if it's there and it's on its own and it's controlling everything, where does it get it from since it's energy? Like even the scientists will understand that this material world is energy. But no one discusses where's the energetic. They all know that all energy comes from a source. Right? Electricity comes from a source. It doesn't just happen. You know, where's the source of it? So therefore, where's the source of all this energy? So that's the thing, is he is the energy. Right? But there's a difference. It has been further proved that the Lord is the... Oh, we are that. Thereby, in effect, all are dealing with the Supreme Brahman only and nothing less, whether one agrees or disagrees. It's just that's the way it is. Chapter 2 is entitled as Avirodha, which means non-conflict. In this chapter, Srila Vyasadeva discusses the objections that may be raised against the metaphysics of Vedanta by the darshanas, other darshanas. While the principal objector is taken to be the Shankya Darshana, but objections of others like Yoga, Vaisheshika, Baudha, Jain, and even some theistic schools have also been dealt with. By showing their fallacy, it is established that the Vedantic text tenets stand unrefuted. Right? So whatever anybody else has, the Vedanta is already giving that, because the Vedanta is the Lord's essence. It means the Lord has given the Vedas. The Vedas are Krishna's breathing. And the Vedas are Krishna. Then Krishna, as Vyas, gives the essence of those Vedas in the Vedanta Sutra, which is this. So no philosophy can exist beyond this. It means he's the most thoughtful. So all details are there in the Vedanta. So others are perceiving, while they're not complete, is they're only perceiving part of this philosophy. This complete Vedantic philosophy, they're only understanding or accepting a portion of it because they have a particular end they want to gain. You know? And so because of that, they accept those portions they like and they don't accept those portions they don't like. You know, it's just like the kid and the meal, right? When the meal's over, the Brussels sprouts are still on the plate. Right, so they accept only certain portions of the meal. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
And then so the Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra.
Yes, yes.
Commentary on the essence.
Yes, yes. That's why you see is that we're discussing the Vedanta Sutra, but when we're discussing the purport in the Bhagavatam, it actually becomes more clear, more accessible. Because it's the commentary on those sutras. Yeah.
I read a verse the other day, it said that just as oil spreads through the whole sesame seed, similarly, the Vedanta is spread throughout the whole right of life.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. So comfortable on that. So because the Lord is spread everywhere, that's why then everything is dealing with Him. So that He is the immediate, He is the intermediate, He is the ultimate goal. And then the technicalities of that, how the metaphysics work and all that, how He's connected with everything, that other schools may or may not accept, but that doesn't mean it changes its authority. Chapter 2 splits into four padas entitled as follows. Shmiti Nyaya Virodha Parihara forms the topic of the first pada. Shmiti Virodha is dealt with in sutras 1-3 and 12 to subjugate mainly the theistic Shankya and Yoga philosophies. This pada casts off any scripture that opposes the standpoint of the Vedas of Brahman as the material cause. And so anything that doesn't accept Brahman as the material cause, then it will deal with that. The Nyaya Virodha is similarly treated in the rest of the sutras, wherein the opposition uses inferior logic to prove their proposition true. Right? Inferior logic means they're not using all the elements of the process to get to Siddhanta. When you get to Siddhanta, that's then proper use of logic. If you just use logic to win an argument, that's an inferior usage. So makes sense. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone fights to establish, you know, some proper situation. That's a proper use of fighting. Someone else fights just to fight and win the fight. Does that make sense? Nothing's accomplished. Does that make sense? You know, like the boxer, he's, you know, 37-0. But what's been accomplished? Right? Nothing, yeah. Then the second, Astika Nastika Virodha Parihara, forms the topic of the second pada. This pada attacks the various darshans or systems of philosophy, such as the atheistic Shankya, Vaisheshika, Buddhism, Jainism, Shaivism, and the Shaktas, on their own grounds, thereby reinstating the Supreme Lord as the only cause of creation. Because they'll say all these other things, there's something else other than the Lord as the source of creation. These darshans belong to two categories, namely the Astika category, declaring either Pradhan or Shiva, Durga or Surya or Ganesh as the first cause, thereby maintaining something other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the first cause. Furthermore, the author tackles with the second Nastika category, the Buddhists and the Jains who miss the Supreme Lord and consequently declare external objects, cognition, uncertainty as the first cause. Footnote 1. Astika means it is so, because they all acknowledge that the Vedas to be authoritative. Nastika means it is not so, because they reject the Vedas and hence are inadequate and weak presentations. Because unless they have the Vedic version, it can't actually be complete. Third pada.
Jara Jivatmana Utpatti Parihara forms the topic of the third pada. The opponents are misled by the Vedantic passages that seemingly imply matter and jiva, the impersonal individual spirit soul, to be eternal and originless. Right, so the jivas and the material world, that they're eternal, so which we also say, but they have no source. That's where then it falls apart. This pada destroys their misconception and establishes that the Supreme Lord is the origin of the elements of creation as well as the jiva. So they have a source. They're eternal in that their existence is eternal. Manifestation, then we know that is not an eternal position. Right? So the jiva who's conditioned, then you see them, then they die, then you see them again, then they die, like this. But the jiva itself is eternal. The same way as the material elements, you'll see them manifest in various forms, then they crumble, then they're manifest again, they crumble, like this. And so then some people are into like apple crumble or something, or have a bit of more tamasic aspect. So, but then everything is wound back up into the Lord, so then it's not even manifest at all, but at the same time it still exists. You just can't perceive it at all. because there's no one there to conceive it. This part of the story. Oh, okay. Then four, pranot pat parihara. You don't need a vowel? Oh. Forms the topic of the fourth part. A subsection of Pada 3 dealt with the gross elements of creation. Pada 4 deals with the subtle element of creation. And so the previous you're dealing with the gross elements and how they're all coming from the Lord. Now we're showing the subtle elements, how they come from the Lord. Namely, prana. The foolish opponents are further tricked by the other Vedantic passages that imply prana to be eternal and originless. Because there, then, we know by what was given in the first chapter. Yeah, in the first chapter is that prana in this case then means the Lord. Because we're saying only the Lord is the eternal aspect. Then, when you're applying prana here, it must mean the Lord. It can't mean something else other than the Lord. That quality may be applied on all other things of the world that are perceived, but its actual quality is based on the Lord itself. This pada overthrows their defective notions, established that the Supreme Lord is the origin of prana. He is the origin of prana, he is prana. Thus we discover that padas 3 and 4 collectively aim at establishing a unit of purport in the apparently divergent and inconsistent cosmology and psychological thoughts of the several Vedantic passages. Right? They're apparently because they're discussing things through in a particular line, and in between when they're discussing it in further detail, then somebody doesn't make the connection. If you're simply working on the secondary or external forms of the logic, then you're going to think that it's a different topic. Right? But it's already been in the opening statements of the discussion and the conclusion of the discussion, it's about the same topic, about the Supreme. So that means what's in between is also, right? You can't get a result unless the intermediate is connected with that with it, right? An end comes by a very specific means, right? If I want cauliflower sabji, I can't be cooking potatoes. I have to cook cauliflower. So that means I have to go to the market and buy cauliflower. So I buy cauliflower, I cook cauliflower, I get cauliflower. Right? Does that make sense? So you can't have something else. But what happens is that because they're using different explanations, it appears. So they think it's a different topic. And so now they use that particular point how they like and miss the whole point. Does that make sense? So just like, let's say, for another example is that Prabhupada's giving a purport. And he's talking about surrender to the Supreme Lord. And in there, he gives example, you know, how one in all conditions is surrender to the Supreme Lord. And then, as an example, he's giving that someone working within Varnashram, then, you know, they can use that position to surrender to the Supreme Lord. But then he'll warn that you should, you know, just because he's following Varnashram doesn't mean he's surrendered to the Supreme Lord. It's because of the devotion. Right? And then he'll conclude that therefore, if you're engaging whatever you have into the Lord's service, then you are established on the position of engaging everything in the Lord's service. Okay? So we see the natural flow here if we actually understand how the you know, syllogisms are working. Now, someone not understanding this or having another purpose, they simply see Varnashram. Right? And so now you're going to get two different schools of them. And they may have sub-branches. So the first school is going to say, see, it's Varnashram. Without Varnashram, you can't be performing devotional service like that. A devotee is performing Varnashram, therefore that's what's going to make it work. So if you're not situated in Varnashram, you're not properly situated in devotional service. Right? Because Prabhupada's used it as an example of how it's engaged in the Lord's service. But that wasn't the point that was being made. It's about the surrender. And the other person is no, but see here, but just because you have Varnashram doesn't mean it's devotional service. It's only bhakti is devotional service. Therefore, we don't need Varnashram. You understand? So this is what's happening with these other schools. They're taking the natural flow of the Adhikaranas that are being presented in the Vedic literatures, and then taking it out of context to the detail of the example that is being given and using it how they like. So that's then what Vyasadeva is dealing with. So, yeah. This is a very, very... Thus, the title Avirodha, or Absence of Contradiction, given it to the chapter, is quite appropriate.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Anitai Gaur.
Tomorrow's for Purusha, right?
Yes, so tomorrow there won't be any class.